Although the floodwaters have receded in Pakistan, the monumental task of rebuilding the country remains to be tackled. Joining me now is Michelle Fanzo, project director or project leader for the World Policy Institute, a foreign policy think tank based in New York, and from Islamabad, Pakistan, Dorothy Blaine, country director for Concern Worldwide. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today for this underreported update. Hello.
Hello.
Dorothy, what's the major focus right now for aid efforts in Pakistan?
Really, the major focus is the move from some of the mainstream emergency relief work towards what we call early recovery. But it's not uniform across the country. The north of the country is in a very different situation from the south. So we're having to deal with different tempos in different places.
Are many people still living in tents?
Most of the people have returned in Punjab. Most of the people have returned in what was Northwest Frontier Province in the north. But in the area of Sindh, which is down towards the Arabian Sea end of Pakistan, the situation is still very difficult. Only about, I think, 15% have been able to return to their areas of origin. The rest are still displaced in one way or another. Some are in camps. Some are living with relatives. Some are just in informal settlements. So it's quite a dismal picture in Sindh because the water isn't receding as fast as people had hoped.
Flooding was mainly in the northwest of the country and hit the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, also known as KPK. How close to the Afghan border is this area?
Well, the flooding, in fact, started in the KPK area in the north of the country, which is borders Afghanistan. It's you know, it's basically in some ways the same ethnic group, Pashtunwa. There's lots of Pashtuns in Afghanistan. But the problem is that it didn't just stay there. The flooding went all the way down the country. It cut through the country like a knife because it followed the path of the Indus River. And so the flooding, in fact, in the north was bad, but the flooding further south has been even worse.
Michelle, weren't millions already displaced in the northwest provinces in Pakistan, places like the Swat Valley, before the flooding started because of the intense fighting between the government and the Taliban aligned groups?
Yes, a number of people had already been displaced, and a number of others were living in very insecure environments because of the fighting. So, yes, this was kind of a double disaster for those people.
I'm assuming some of them had returned to their homes only to have to face this disaster.
Yes, that is correct.
But food security was a major worry as the flooding worsened, and according to the UN, about a half million pounds of wheat stock washed away.
Mm-hmm.
Have food supplies stabilized in these regions?
No, and I'm sure Dorothy can add to this, but no, because the food that washed away were both food crops as well as cash crops, a significant portion of those crops for the entire year. This is where many people in Pakistan get their food. So if that's gone now, it means it's also gone for the winter and gone for the spring. And one of the bigger concerns is because in certain areas the water has really damaged the land or has not fully receded, farmers can't plant their next year's crops right now, which is what they should be doing, which means many Pakistani people will need food aid well into 2012.
Dorothy, have there been issues with the delivery of food aid to affected people? Haven't a number of bridges and roads been washed away?
Well, this has been the problem. There's still people who probably haven't been properly, whose needs haven't been properly addressed. The situation is very difficult. Helicopters were having to drop supplies, which is never an ideal way of delivering anything to anyone. They were dropping supplies to people who were stranded in their rooftops, who were stranded in small islands of land. And as I said earlier, the water has still not receded. So this problem is not going away in Sindh. It has improved in the areas we were talking about earlier, KPK, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. The water pressure has gone away there. It's gone away in most of Punjab, which, as Michelle said, was the sort of breadbasket of Pakistan. But the land is not capable of replanting at the moment. There has to be a lot of rehabilitation work done before that arable land will be back in a fit state.
What about one of the other things that we often see in a disaster situation? Outbreaks of disease like cholera and diarrhea. Is that something aid workers are also having to deal with?
Yes, and it's a sad reflection, really. Pakistan's had so many disasters that I would say generally the aid community is quite good at dealing with these things now, because there was all these worries about it during the earthquake as well. So this isn't the first time people have been living in camps. People have been living with standing water. It's happened over the last few years.
The government was criticized for its slow and inadequate response to the flooding. What are they doing now to aid the displaced and people and to rebuild the flood zone? Have they picked up their efforts, or is it still kind of a disaster?
The government has got a number of schemes going on, some of which are more successful than others, and some of which are adequate for the task, and others are perhaps not ideal. But you might have heard about these sort of Watan cards they're giving to people so that they can actually get some emergency money straight away. They've got other schemes going on. Obviously, there's the UN as well, the World Food Programme, delivering food to people. So between the international agencies and the government, there is a lot going on. The major problem is 20 million people. So even with a lot going on, it's not enough.
Michelle, you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, up to about a week ago, the U.S. has provided about $362 million in aid and quite a bit of it in food aid. Just last month, the U.N. Issued its largest disaster appeal ever for $2 billion for Pakistan, which, you know, only a bit of that has come. There's still quite a bit that needs to be done, and part of the biggest challenge is still accessing the people. Many people are still in remote areas, difficult to reach areas. Pakistan's quite a large country, too. It's not that easy to reach everyone that needs assistance. The government, I would say, yes, has definitely increased their efforts, in part because the international community has provided some resources to enhance their own resources.
I'm talking with Michelle Fonzo, project leader for the World Policy Institute, which is a foreign policy think tank based here in New York, and from Islamabad, Pakistan, Dorothy Blaine, country director for Concern Worldwide. We're talking about what's happening now in Pakistan in the aftermath of these terrible floods as part of our underreported series. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Dorothy, unlike the earthquake that hit Pakistan last year, the flooding was somewhat gradual starting at the end of July. Does that change the way that aid groups and the government should respond to a crisis?
Well, I think it's really just a problem of scope and scale. I look back now, I was here during the earthquake, I look back now and we thought that was probably the worst disaster Pakistan was going to see. There were three million people who were affected by the earthquake, but it was quite centralized in the area north of Islamabad, in Kashmir and in Northwest Frontier Province. This has been a slow unfolding disaster. I say it started in the north and it's worked all the way down. And in a nation of about 170 million people, there's now 20 million people affected by it. Now, 20 million, I can think of it in terms of my own country. I come from Scotland and it's like, you know, four or five times the entire population. So if you actually think about it in those terms, you realize that this is a disaster that no government could really cope with. And so I find it that even with all that's going on, and I know how much is going on, it's very hard to see the situation improving rapidly. The people who were worst affected by this disaster were already very poor. So it's poor people who had very little who now have nothing. And how the government's going to pull all that together, it's a major challenge for any nation.
Well, this has also taken place in an area where there has been a lot of conflict for other reasons. Have Western aid workers been threatened by fundamentalist groups?
There's been a number of statements made, and obviously there's a number of threats that have been sort of unsubstantiated or ones that perhaps have more to them. But so far, there hasn't really been any particular incident with aid workers involved in the floods. There is, however, this... Carry on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, however, this background story going on, everyone must be aware of the NATO oil tankers. And at least, you know, one series of attacks took place very close to the area where many aid workers are working.
That's what I was just about to ask you, Michelle, mm-hmm. about the attacks on the convoys of NATO supply trucks. When Pakistani soldiers were sent to address the flood damage, did that leave holes in their defenses elsewhere in the country?
Yes, and I would say there's probably a couple things going on with the NATO oil tankers. I mean, yes, to some degree, the Pakistani army, you know, has been deployed in different places now to do humanitarian and aid assistance, not the entire army, but some of them. And, of course, then that would take resources away from borders and other areas. The NATO oil tanker incidents, of which I believe there have been three, and there was quite a large one just yesterday, is a sign of something larger than just the Army being somewhere else. It becomes a real, you know, what we would call a political football. There are a number of, you know, people saying, well, where is the government and where is the Army to protect these tankers? And the reply is, well, this is really private industry. You know, NATO has contracted with private companies, and it should be those companies that are protecting their own assets, which in theory sounds great. But if you've been to some of these border crossings, it's really not possible for a simple driver who often drives for many days with this with the oil tanker to protect his truck. And what's happening through, you know, a political lens is Pakistan is very upset with the U.S. over both drone attacks and the more recent NATO helicopter attack that happened on Pakistani paramilitary soldiers at one of the borders that is seen as an accident on our part. And we have apologized. Our ambassador has apologized. General Petraeus has apologized to Pakistan for this error because there were soldiers killed. But understandably, Pakistan is upset, and many people are seeing the border closing and the subsequent attacks that are happening because of that closing as being allowed to happen as kind of retribution for these military missteps.
On the other hand, as you point out, the United States has pledged more aid than any other country.
Correct.
Does that play at all in Pakistan, or is that something that is considered less important in the light of all these other things?
I've thought about this a lot. It's a complicated situation because on the one hand, you do have the U.S. Providing the most aid and you know, being fairly visible in certain parts of Pakistan. Plus, we've also, but even before this disaster, given quite a bit of you know, development aid to Pakistan. But the security and military issues that we're involved with in Pakistan are really of a different animal. And what I think is happening is that while some people recognize America as stepping up as a great humanitarian ally and even appreciate that, they're not as thrilled with us as a security ally. And those two things are very separate in people's minds. I mean, I think about it, if it was the other way around here and somebody was helping us from the outside with, say, a Katrina-like disaster, but at the same time blowing up parts of Seattle for some other reason, you know, it's a real mixed message. It's a real mixed message, and you really have to say, what in the long term are people going to remember? Unfortunately, particularly in the Northwest Territories, people will probably remember our drone attacks much longer than our food aid.
Dorothy, there's been talk about the the government of Pakistan perhaps falling, a military takeover. Is that something that's being discussed in Islamabad?
It's discussed, actually, even in times before this. It's quite a regular dinner party conversation, and I'm sure it's not just at dinner parties. It's probably in just about every sitting room in the country.
But this has exacerbated the situation.
The floods have definitely exacerbated the situation, but President Zardari's court has been in a very shaky peg for a long, long time. I mean, there's lots of people who are dissatisfied with the way he came to power. There's lots of people who feel he's not been effective, even when he's done things that, certainly in Western eyes, would seem to be progressive. He's had very little thanks for it here. So he is, I suppose, the typical lame duck president, and there's lots of opposition, but there's not really lots of credible opposition. The main opposition group have been in power before, and people didn't necessarily think particularly highly of them then. So in the background of Pakistan, you always have the army lurking. Lots of views of it are that this particular chief of army staff is not interested in the political side. He's far less interested than the same Musharraf, who of course came into power on the back of a coup and stayed in power until he had more or less flee the country. It's a very mixed bag, but one way or another, the government is not highly respected.
I want to thank both of you for participating in today's underreported segment. Dorothy Blaine, Country Director for Concern Worldwide in Pakistan, and Michelle Fanzo, Project Leader for the World Policy Institute, a foreign policy think tank based here in New York. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.